I am fantasy author Elle Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, June 21st, 2019, and this is episode 19 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing was Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik. It is a fabulous book that I just finished yesterday, late last night, and I absolutely adored it. I just had this wonderful feeling all the way reading through it, and I kept wanting to stop and make like Goodreads updates because I'm trying to do Goodreads more now. But yeah, it was so good, and it was really inspiring. It was actually really something that I needed, because sometimes when you read a really, really good book that is so far beyond your ability as an author, it makes you feel a little bit like, why am I doing this? But then sometimes you read a really, really good book and it just fills you with inspiration. And that is how I felt while reading Spinning Silver. I was taking some notes down. It just sparked some thought about issues that I've been having, especially with book 4 of Earthsinger Chronicles, which I'm still working on, of course, and working, like this week, I did not get much work done, but I was taking notes as I was reading it, just things were sparking, and it's not like, you know, anything copying or anything, because it's a very, very different stories, very different writing styles, very different focuses, but it did spark some things. It was inspiring. And it's a great example of filling the well, and why filling the well can be very important for a creative person. And for me, that can be movies. It can be any form of art input. So music, a lot of times music gives me ideas and inspires me about mood and feeling and characters and stuff. Obviously movies, TV shows, other books. And so, yeah, that's what this book did. And so I had a couple of little mini revelations this week on my story. But Spinning Silver, some really interesting things that it does is how it deals with villains and, also with point of view. So there's six points of view and point of POV characters. And the whole book is written in first person. And there's no labels about who's speaking when they change narrators, but she does an amazing job of giving you context clues immediately, very, very early on, within the first paragraph, to tell you who's speaking. There's only one section where I was confused and had to go back, and that's just because I started skimming a little bit. And not skimming because I was bored, but I was tired, and I wasn't completely invested. For most of this book, for 98% of this book, I was completely invested in everything. But yeah, and so it was just to have these different first person narrators, and you always know who's speaking, and you're never confused. At least I wasn't, except for that one time. That's really great. And if you remember my rant from a few weeks ago about a fantasy novel that used January, I think it was one of the months in it. It was a second world fantasy. And so what's interesting about this book, about Spinning Silver, is that the world in which it takes place in, because the characters are Jewish. And so obviously there is a Bible, there's a Torah, there's an Israel, there's that whole history from our world, but the countries are not the same. So, and it's a fairy tale, you know, it's a ostensibly retelling of Rumpelstiltskin, but retelling isn't quite the right word. It takes Rumpelstiltskin and then does something really, really cool with it. So fairy tales, I don't think that they are considered second world fantasy. And I'm not an expert by any means on these categorizations, but they're sort of in our world, but sort of not. And so this was a world that obviously there's, you know, one of the main characters is Jewish, and there's anti-Semitism as a background for the world and for these characters and the world they live in. But there's also ice fairies and fire goblins and, you know, demons and magic. And so my point is they have our months. They have June. It's like part of this, the theme is, you know, these winter, these beings of winter called the Starik, are harming the world because winter comes later and lasts longer and longer each year. And that's part of one of the conflicts in the book. And so it's mid-June and they're having a blizzard. And so it did not bother me at all.
because it worked and it was done well. And because this world, I didn't have to think about, like, when you introduce, I guess the thing was, by the time they had introduced June, they had already introduced Judaism into this world. And so it was already a version of this world in some way. And so that is how it can be done in a way that works, in my opinion, in terms of having parts of our world in a fantasy world. It just has to make sense. It just has to be grounded and rely upon something. But yeah, so I thoroughly enjoyed Spinning Silver. I'm so, so glad that I read it. The characters and everything in the world building, and the characters are so smart, you know? And so sometimes I also, when I read books that I really love, and I think about how is my book like that and how unlike it, and how my book is not like that, which goes into the other, another one of the sort of mini breakthroughs I had this week on my story, because I was going through StoryGrid stuff and trying to figure out my genres. So the StoryGrid has these a slightly different take on genres. You have an internal genre and an external genre. And I was getting a little confused about what book four is. Is it an action? Because I think up until this point, the first three books have definitely been in the action genre. But there's another genre called society. And by the time we get to book four, we have these societal forces in play. And I wasn't sure if I was really writing an action or writing society, and whether I wanted to be doing one or the other. And so I was just doing more research, and the StoryGrid website, I found this article about discovering your story's core, which just kind of broke things open. It's like I felt like a light shining on my head after I read it. And what helped me was the idea of look at your favorite books and what do they have in common? And can you, the things that your favorite books have in common very possibly are a thing that you value, you know, that you really, that really speaks to you. And then how can you write a story like that? And so I thought about a couple of my favorite books, and what came to mind was Sea of Tranquility by Katya Millay, which was a fabulous contemporary YA book from maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And she hasn't written anything else since then. That was her only book. And I check on her every, like, once a year or so to see if there's something I've missed. Because, you know, Erin Morgenstern just came out, is coming out with a new book after 12 years after The Night Circus. So one day Katya Millay will come out with something else, I hope. But yes, The Sea of Tranquility, I've read that several times, and I could read it several more times. And also The Namesake by Kate Stratling, which is, I have to read again. It's just on my list to read again for this reason, because they were like, okay, look at your favorite books and read them again and see what it is about them. And they actually share qualities that I realized upon reflection. And that is a mildly unlikable female protagonist at the beginning who is unlikable because of some difficulty or trauma or wound in her life, and who finds, I guess, herself and a place and kind of carves out a space for herself where she can feel safe and feel accepted and loved. And then they also, I was trying to see, I'm not sure about Namesake because I don't remember if the protagonist, I mean, if the male lead, if the love interest or the hero or whatever conforms, but there's usually the male lead has certain qualities. What I wrote down was tough, vulnerable boys. And there's just surprise. So yeah, the girls struggle to accept themselves. They're dealing with some form of self-hatred. And then they learn to find love, happiness, acceptance, and they overcome themselves, which are the real obstacle. And I was like, I think Song of Blood and Stone is like that. When I look back subconsciously, yeah, I had written a book that was kind of like some of my favorite books. And I had read Song of Blood and Stone before The Namesake even came out. But like, just in general, if that is a core thing that I'm attracted to, then it's going to come out in my writing too. And one of the struggles that I've been going through with book four is change. Like, the first two books in the series are more similar than the last two books in the series. Because I changed as a writer, and also just because the story required different things. And as it grew and the scope got bigger, you know, I couldn't do the same things exactly. Song of Blood and Stone has a, compared to the other books, a much more narrow focus. And then Whispers of Shadow and Flame is similar. It broadens a bit, but it's about these people in this place doing this thing. And then by book three, it gets wider and the world gets bigger and the conflicts gets bigger. And then book four, you know, where the scope is much larger. And I've been struggling with how many POVs to have, and who to follow and all of that kind of thing as the story unfolds, because I've been reticent about having too many, and it's too much to juggle. I think there's a thing about reader experience. Like, you've promised the reader a certain experience that they're going to have in the book. And I don't want to break promises to the reader. But I don't want to unnecessarily strangle the story. It has to go where it has to go. And it needs as many narrators as it needs. And I'm trying to come to grips with that. So I had looked. Through this process of thinking about, you know, my favorite stories, and I was thinking about the women in book four in the series, and who's telling the story. And I came down to these POVs of these women who have to deal with, or women and girls, I guess, who have to deal with those things, that struggling against themselves, and trying to carve out this place where they can be safe and be loved and have their family and just have peace. You know, it's the struggle for, as much as it is the external peace, the internal peace. Because one of the other things that I've been struggling with is making it a story about the people. You know, like, it becomes bigger and the scope is bigger and it's about the world and they have these larger forces that they have to battle. But I don't want to write a story just about forces. I want to write about people. And so it all came back around to who's telling the story and who has the arcs. And way back when, in early May, one of the first things that I had done as I was trying to plot this story is list all of the different characters and their goals and their desires and their conflicts and what kind of arcs they have. And there were four characters that have positive change arcs. And I was like, oh, maybe they're the POV characters. And then this week, going through this process, thinking about, okay, who are the characters that correspond to this idea of the story core, this idea that I looked at with some of my favorite books, and it's the same four characters. And I was like, oh. So I had come to this very early, but sometimes it just takes a while for it to gel and to sink in and to lock in, to feel like the right decision. Because sometimes you make decisions and then I change my mind and other things look better. So I always want to be testing and prodding at things and making sure that they still hold true. And so at least those four, and then maybe a couple of others when necessary in order to tell the part of the story that they need to tell. And that's something that Spinning Silver did really effectively with multiple points of view. And it didn't feel like too much. And a lot of other books do this too. And I did it in book three. We'll see if there's edits on that. I still haven't heard. I have no idea whether they're going to be edits or it's going to go straight to copy edits, but we shall see. But thinking back on book three, you know, I wouldn't have turned it in if I didn't feel good about it. Like, I probably could still be improved, but I felt strong that everybody who has a POV in that book needed it one. And so I just have to, and it came so naturally for that book. This one is just different. You know, every book is different. And this one, the plotting has been much more difficult. And I don't want to say more difficult than the last one, because it has been years since I have plotted a full-length book of these, of Earthsinger Chronicles, from scratch. You know, like, book three was written in 2016. So maybe it's also just getting back into it, and I had to do a deep dive into the world again in order to refamiliarize myself with things. And I have notes in all different notebooks and a huge story Bible file with all kinds of things in it. And yeah, so it's going. It's just, I don't even have a schedule yet. I'm still further away from that than I wanted to be. But I did feel really good and really happy about these sort of breakthroughs. They illuminated something that had been blocked in me. And I have jotted down lots of other ideas for these characters and what they're going through. Because like when I say it's not plotted, the things that have to happen are in my head and they always have been. It's just the details and the connective tissue and are they woven together? And some of the things that I know can't happen in a first draft, but I still feel like I need to be more on top of them before I even first draft it. Because I'm tempted to just start writing and halfway pants my way through, which feels very inefficient. And I'm pushing back on that. But at this point, almost like 2 months, like 7 weeks, I think, since I started plotting it. And I did take off 2 weeks to write the novella, which helped. But yeah, I'm still not super clear on this. And in a weird way. So it's looking more and more like I'm just going to have to start writing. Like I do have a first scene in my head and I can go from there and see where it takes me and maybe just take a more iterative, not sure if that's the right word, but like start with a scene and then go back to the outline, then write another scene and then go back to the outline and just do it that way. It feels so, I don't want to say wasteful, but like, that feels like it could get messy. And that scares me. But such is life. Other things thinking about what makes a story worth telling? Like a mini existentialist crisis as I was going through all of this. Like, what makes a story worthwhile? What makes it worth telling? Like, thinking about this planning, going through some of the planning worksheets and documents and thinking about why I want to tell the story and what makes it a story worth telling. That's also been on my mind. Beyond the fact that I need to end the series and not leave people hanging, deeper, going back to the themes and worldview, you know, what am I trying to say with the novel and with the series? And I think I know, like I wrote it down and it wasn't anything surprising. And I've been holding that in my mind this entire time. So that does seem clear. So it's just getting from that to the actual plot of the book. Ah, lovely. So this weekend starts the events that I have for the summer. I will be signing tomorrow, as I'm recording this, which will be in the past for you, but tomorrow I'll be signing at ALA, the American Library Association National Conference in DC, and in a few weeks I'm off to Boston for ReaderCon, July 11th through the 14th. I'll be in New York for RWA at the end of July. And then I've got readings, like bookstore events in Baltimore and in Northern Virginia. And whew, it sounds like a lot. It is a lot. And I'm really excited about, I've been trying to find an independent bookstore, like a local indie bookstore to collaborate with and offer signed copies of the books as they're coming out. So I found one. It's Books with a Past and they're in Maryland. And, so what's going to happen is I think next week I'm going to start a promotion, like promoting. I'm going to make some graphics this weekend and start promoting. If you pre-order Song of Blood and Stone from Books with a Past, then you'll get a signed copy and a new bookmark that I just ordered and some stickers that I just ordered. So I've designed the swag. I've ordered the swag. And I'm excited about this. I think this could be really fun. I do feel a little frustrated and like, a little overwhelmed. Like, I don't know, in the way that marketing is always overwhelming and frustrating because I never really know what to do. But I listed out everything that's happening, the live events, and there's some blog tours and Bookstagram tours coming up for both books. And I want to do a read along of Song of Blood and Stone probably in September. So because Whispers Book 2 comes out October 1st. And so I want to set up a group. I don't know if I want to do a Facebook group because I don't like Facebook. I've seen other authors doing them like on Twitter or Instagram, and I just have to see, I have to decide what makes the most sense, but kind of do, you know, some behind the scenes stuff and split up chapters a few every week and then kind of invite people to do a read along, whether it's a reread, or a new read for people before book two comes out. So that should be fun. And yeah, once I listed out everything that's already in the works, I felt better about my frustration and like feeling like I'm not doing enough because I'm doing stuff. I am doing stuff. And I always feel like I could be doing more, but I don't know what that is all the time. And then I get overwhelmed because I'm tired and I need to be writing. And I didn't write that much this week because I was planning stuff and designing stuff and ordering stuff. And there's nothing to do without the books. So the books have to come first. Usually I'm good about that, but there are times, and I think also times when it's still churning, like it's not there yet. So I feel like I have to give myself a little bit more time and focus on some other things, and work is still kind of insane and driving me crazy. So yeah, but overall things are good. I'm feeling on the edge of burnout and I'm still working to stave it off. And so I can keep feeling good so that when the ideas come, I was going to say when the ideas come, I can flow with it, but that's not really how it works. Like you have to do the work for the ideas to come. You have to like button chair, hands on keyboard, that whole thing. And then welcome the ideas. And even if they're not there, do the work anyway. I don't know. It feels like platitudes, but it's been my experience that that's how it works. And so create space so that I don't get burned out, but not so much space that I don't get anything done. So yeah, that's it for me this week. I'm also going climbing on Sunday, which I am excited about. And hopefully that'll be a good stress reliever because I do love climbing, going climbing outside in Great Falls, Virginia. So that is it for me this week, and I will talk to you next week. Until then, happy reading. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts, and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.